This week's episode of the Inside Running Podcast is sponsored by our friends at Fractal. Check out their summer range of caps over at fractal.com.au to see why runners like you now choose Fractal headwear. Enjoy the show.
Pain. Now I hear you say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin.
Welcome to episode number 108 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. We're coming out a day late this week, but we're hoping to get a show together. I was looking a bit touch and go there for a while. Welcome to my co-host, Bradley Croker, up in Canberra. How are you going?
Not too bad. Blown away today. It's been bloody windy up here.
Yeah, you were just complaining about that off air. Bit windy up there. Wind gusts of 80 kilometres per hour.
Yep, it's tough when you're a PE teacher and you're outside all day in that.
You're not a PE teacher though, are you? Don't you just fill in now?
Yeah, but I was PE today.
Yeah, that's a tough gig. And my other co-host down in Ballarat, usually the one whinging about the weather. How are you going, Moose?
I can still whinge if you want me to.
Yeah, give us one. What's happening in Ballarat?
You were 2 minutes ago.
Still shit. Still real shit. Still windy. Going. The wind can fuck right off. No one likes wind.
Yeah, worst running thing, isn't it, wind?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're all good. Can you hear a baby crying in the background? I'm recording in a different room tonight. Can you hear that?
I could, yeah, I can hear it.
Yeah.
First baby cry on the podcast. Let's get on to recapping our weeks. Brad, do you want to go first?
Sure. So Monday, 50 minutes at 4:12s. Tuesday, session out at Mulligan's where it was just 8K sort of tempo, but the emphasis was just running the hills hard and then cruising the downhills and the flat sections. So average 3:31s for that. It ends up being a lot harder than an even 3:31s because you sort of gas yourself a little bit on the hills, which you wouldn't do if you're running at a consistent pace. Then Wednesday, 95 minutes, so 23K. And then Thursday, Mulligan's was closed due to like a fire ban. I think it was like close to 40 degrees that day. So I just ran from home down to Yerribee Pond, which is on the bike paths and concrete, a little bit flatter, 408s for an hour. Then session Friday was 3x2K off a 1K float. Pretty much ran between sort of 3:15 and 3:20 per kilometre for the 2K reps and around 3:45s for the floats. Didn't feel super comfortable, so it's a 3:24 average for the 8K. And then Saturday morning, I had a mate's birthday party in Sydney on the Saturday night, so and we had to come back early on Sunday for Viv's fashions on the field, so I didn't want to do 30K in 30 degree heat on the Sunday arvo. So I got my long run done on the Saturday morning, 2 hours and 5 minutes, and just over 30K at 4:04s, and then we headed up to Sydney for the party. Got back around lunchtime on the Sunday, so Viv could do her fashions, and then I went out that afternoon for 12K at 4:10s. So 130K for the week in singles. Yeah, so nothing. Nothing special there.
Don't worry about the running week. Tell us about the party and Viv's fashions on the field. Give us some details there.
So yeah, Party was a good mate of mine, a surprise 50th. Nick Cope, so he's a sub 14 minute 5k runner back in the day, and yeah, it was good. There's some guys there that were, I guess, at the end of their running career as I was sort of starting. So there's some guys that I haven't seen for sort of 10 or 15 years, and there would have been close to 10 guys that have represented Australia in the past. So yeah, it was cool catching up with those guys. A few listeners there as well. So yeah, it was a good night. Yeah, and then Fashions, Viv had a win, closed out the season with a victory at Queen Bianne Races. So
she got the W. How good's that?
Yeah, she got the win. So picked up like a $1,000 travel voucher and some luggage and some wine and massage vouchers. So yeah, good honor.
Yeah,
good on Viv. Is that like winning parkrun after being at Melbourne Marathon the week before down in Melbourne?
Pretty much, but still, it's $1,000 travel voucher, $800 worth of luggage, which she'll probably flog on eBay for $400. Not bad.
Yeah.
What brand?
What's that?
What brand?
I don't even know what brand it is, but Viv's won. How many suitcases have you won in Fashions over how many years? She's won about $4,000 worth of luggage over her. Because yeah, for some reason they always give out luggage at Fashions on the Field competition, so we certainly don't need any more luggage.
Yeah, very good. Hey, Brad, was there a theme at that party you went to? Because I saw a photo and you had not the Rabbitohs. What's the Canberra Raiders top on? There was a couple of listeners wearing some Sydney Swans jumpers. What was the go there?
Yeah, so it was wear your favourite footy team's colours. So he's a Western Bulldogs supporter. So he had that jersey on, and another mate of mine, Ben Liddy, was there in his Rabbitohs jersey. So that's why I was wearing the Raiders top.
Mm. Very good. And yeah, back to your running. Like, you're feeling all right? Like, pretty solid long run again, 404s. Session's nothing special though.
I'm not running. I'm not really running great, that's for sure. So I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing, but yeah, and then this morning was even worse. My body's like, my tip post still niggly. Like, it's not enough to stop me from running, but I'm just sore through my hips and my back. Like, even at work today, just standing around, I can feel sort of my adductors and my hip flexors and psoas all just sort of tightening up and being quite sore. So yeah, but I'm being consistent, but it's just not clicking.
When are you in to see Hisco next?
I've got an appointment with him tomorrow. So I saw him last Wednesday, and then see him again tomorrow. And then I think it's 2 weeks after that I'll see him again.
Yep. All good. You'll be right for Steigen. It's not too far away.
Yes.
Moose, what did you do? 98.7 kilometres.
Did I get that much?
Yeah.
That's surprising, actually. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yep, nearly hit the ton.
Get off the rails, Moose.
No, but...
Yes, you admitted you were off the rails. I'm like, one day it has told us you were off the rails during the week.
Oh, maybe, but not by Sunday. I was all right.
Back on the rails.
Monday morning, maybe. Went out with Watto for my first run back after, like, 10 days off or something. And I said, I need 30 minutes real easy, and he took me into the bush, 220 metres of climbing, 55 minutes, just moron bloke. I knew exactly what he was doing. He's got a bit of head of steam from winning Run for a Cause, so he knew I was not fit. He likes to take advantage when that happens. Tuesday, got out. I reckon I did a few surges on Tuesday. So ran along Vic Park and the lake, and then did some 30-second ons and offs just to see how we were going. Wednesday morning, ran at 7:13 a.m. for a distance of 11K. I'm not clicking into that, but I think I probably did some hills, given it was 122 meters. Afternoon, did Run Club, felt pretty shit. Back starting to get a bit tight again. Thursday, had the day off. It was real average weather, like, oh, it was about as bad as you could get Thursday. Super hot, and the wind was insane. Probably, I don't know, windier than in Canberra, that's for sure. Friday jogged just light in the morning, and then had a had a bit of a function on in the evening, and then Saturday morning went down, did a threshold, and oh, funny because I warmed up 6K, and during the 6K at the start, I thought, oh, this is awful. So I was just jogging actually, but then by the time I finished, then the boys started to break off and get into their workouts. I thought, oh, I'll jump in, I'll help out Nath Hardigan, and I did his one lap of his workout, which was the workout was 1K on, 1K float. So we ran around 3:10s and 3:30s, and that felt pretty easy actually. Did 6K, no dramas. He went on, not sure whether he picked it up or not. He probably just jogged around the corner and stopped because no one spotted him for the rest of the morning. In the afternoon, ran with a friend of mine, Chop, ran around the lake. So Sunday morning, drove down to the coast, ran 20K with a few crew from Geelong. That's a nice run down there. It was a good morning. And then in the evening, had a jog as well. Felt absolute rubbish on that jog. Then went out. We had a bit of a work do. So 98K, yeah, looking back, the week actually looks okay. But it doesn't show you how bad. If I put on a how did you feel during these runs thing, it would all be hard. And my lower back and my glutes just feel awful at the moment.
Big Moose is struggling, Brad.
Yeah, welcome to my world, Moose.
Now really I feel struggling now to get consistency in. I'm just looking back going, oh, shit week. Need to start getting it. I think I'll just run singles the whole week this week, see if I can get a bit of momentum going at 100K weeks.
The back niggle seems to be hanging around, though.
Yeah, it's hanging around way longer than normal. Way longer.
Getting treatment?
Yeah, I am. I've been going to osteo, and then I tomorrow I've got a massage booked with a different fella, and I think I'm going to go get a proper look at it because it's hanging around so long. Like I might have a look and maybe go to a sports doc, see what we can do about getting some sort of something to take the inflammation away from the joint, from the disc, maybe.
The highs and lows of distance running, hey. Well, it was a month ago you were at the World Champs.
I haven't had a bad patch like this for a while.
Yeah. Anyway, you're good at getting yourself right. You'll figure that out. Yeah. I'll quickly whiz through my week. I kicked off with 7K easy Monday morning and then 15K in the afternoon on Monday. I think I might have done a couple of strides there as well. Tuesday morning I did 6K in the morning before work, and then in the afternoon I did 10x1K on the grass athletics track in Moama, and same thing, it was pretty windy and you did have me down to do them at like 2:55 to 3 minutes, and I did the first couple in 3 minutes and I just felt like the effort was just way too high for 3 minute kind of K pace, and like the oval we do it on is patchy as, and it's more like kind of cross country and the wind, and I kind of just made the call that I didn't want to pull out of the session, and I just thought, you know what, today 3 minute pace is 3:05 on the watch, and I just kind of thought keep more under 3:05 and that's going to be a good night out. And yeah, it was. I kind of ran them pretty much all in 3:03s, 3:04s, finished off in 3:01, maybe kicked it up a bit towards the end there. That was off 90 seconds. Hard, long session on the track. Like when you're doing that solo, it kind of does your head in a bit. It just feels like you're out there the whole evening. But great practice for 10K track stuff, I suppose. So yeah, stoked to get that one done. I had a recovery day on Wednesday and I listened to it was called the Chewing the Fat podcast. I hadn't heard of it before, but they had Jeff Risley on there and it was a really good listen, and yeah, he was really open and authentic and genuine, talking about some of the struggles he's had over the last couple of years, and a lot of that stuff I hadn't heard before. So totally recommend, if you follow Jeff Brisley's running career over the years, check that podcast out, Chewing the Fat podcast. It was a fascinating listen and easy to be able to pass some time listening to that on a jog. So well done to the guys putting that together. Did a hot half an hour in the afternoon on Wednesday, and then Thursday was that shocking day. We were code red up here, which was a bit scary. That's the first time I think I've been alive when the Code Red's been there. And as you said, Moose, it was just so windy and just so hot. And yeah, a lot of the schools kind of shut up here. The school I'm working at the moment didn't. So got up early and got the 16K long run done, and or the medium long run, and did some hill strides in there as well. But it was just one of those mornings at like 6:30. I think it was already 32 degrees, and yeah, makes you worried about the future of our planet when we're getting days like that when it's not even summer. It's yeah. Anyway,
low humidity though.
What was the humidity? I put a screenshot up of the weather.
17%. That's low.
That's low humidity. Dry heat, Moose.
Listen to the interview this week. He basically calls this easy running.
I started to listen to it when I was cooling down from my workout today, actually. It's yeah, they talk about this stuff. So there we go. What was it? Wind was 43 Ks and the weather was 42. So hot, stinking. And luckily, I did see on the news that night, actually, Moose. I was watching the state news and they said, you know, we kind of had a pretty good day, Victoria, considering it was a kind of code red in different areas, but there was a fire near Echuca and Ballarat. And I'm thinking, oh, well, that's good representation from the podcast. A lot of the listeners, if they're watching that news, would be able to relate to those two spots in the state. You had one down there, didn't you? Where were you? Just out of town?
Yeah, near Clunes.
Clunes, that's right, yeah. We were just Clunes. One between Echuca and Rochester. We had a few grass paddocks go up. Friday, we had the cool change come through, so it was actually nice going out for a run on Friday. I did the workout at 3 minutes steady, 1 minute jog, 1 minute hard, 1 minute jog times five. So 30 minutes in total, all on effort, no prescribed paces. And one of my favorite workouts, it's just cool because you just have a stopwatch face on. I kind of programmed it into the watch just to beep when I had to go. No kind of other data coming at you. And yeah, I just enjoy not having the pressure on to hit a pace. And I enjoy just always putting the brakes on in that 3 minute effort because you kind of keep telling yourself, this is steady, this is steady. Just settle down a bit. And then you kind of get that 1 minute jog, which isn't a long time. And then you punch the 1 minute hard and then the 1 minute jog. And then you do it again. It's just, yeah, great workout. I enjoy that one, Moose. It's, I don't know where you got it from, but I think you did it at St. Moritz. I reckon you'd see.
Oh, yeah, I've done this a fair bit, actually. Yeah. Heaps have done this. I really like it. I think it teaches you to learn your running as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. And it's even though it's 30 minutes, it goes relatively quickly. Like, you know, the sets, all of a sudden you kind of finish it. And, yeah, so looking back, I was kind of a bit over 3 minute pace for the 3 minute steady and kind of that 2:50 pace for the 1 minute on kind of thing. So that was good. Cooled down for 5K, so pretty big mileage morning. Easy 8K in the afternoon on Friday, easy 16K in the morning Saturday, and then I caught up with Archie Reed and Glenn McMillan, two local guys, and we did a long run together in Echuca Moama, took the boys on some Moama trails that they haven't ran on before, and I did 26, they did 21, and we averaged 4:06 pace, so we got ticking along a bit at the end there, and that brought me to 154K for the week, so good not having a race on for once, actually. I kind of bank a bit more extra mileage and, yeah, all in one piece going forward.
Good. Done. What are you aiming for at Steigen?
Don't know. Not sure. It depends if I run Zatopek the week before. Waiting on an email back from Athletes Victoria. Put my name in the hat for that one. So,
Yeah. Don't know yet.
Just depends.
It's hard to plan without knowing, isn't it?
It is hard to plan your workouts and stuff. But it's even just, like, you get a night, like, the weather's just so hit and miss at the moment. Like, you could get a perfect weather night at Zatopek, but then you could have 35K winds at Steigen, or the other way around. Like, it's just so hard, and that can have such a big impact on the track running. So, yeah, it's, I don't really want to put a time on it, because anything can happen. Remember that year it was, like, 30 degrees down there at Steigen? Like, that was super hot.
It was hotter. There were fires on the way from Ballarat that year. Yeah. I hadn't moved to Ballarat yet, but I know there were all fires in, I think, Scottsburn area. And, yeah, it was terrible.
They had the hose on us. Remember that? Just out and back straight.
Yeah. I remember, because that was, like, one chance. I thought I would break 30 minutes that night, and I didn't.
Yeah, I smoked you that night. Did I tell you about that night, Brad?
Can't remember that happening, actually.
I rocked up not thinking I was fit because I'd already done Melbourne Marathon. Just rocked up for a bit of a hit out. Smoked Moose. Moose had been training for about 6 months to try and have a good 10K run.
How much did you beat him by?
Oh, about 15 seconds, I reckon. What did you run that night, Moose? Can you remember?
30, 40 something.
Yeah,
30, I reckon, 45.
Maybe. I reckon I ran like 30, 27 or something. I think I come third. Anyway,
well,
living in the old days again.
Broken that since.
Exactly. Let's thank the Patreon supporters, eh? Kick us off, Bradley. You want to do your one? There's a couple of hard words pronouncing yours. That's why I gave it to you.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether I was going to pronounce all three or just go Bill T from Prospect Hall in Ireland, but I'll have a crack. So Bill T, Prospect Hall, Monterey, Kinsalbeg in Ireland.
Good work.
Yeah, thank you. We don't have a lot of information from Bill, but we think he may have run City to Surf back in 2013. Not overly confident with that stat, but thanks for your support, Bill. That's the main thing.
Well, he did list the four towns that he lives in, though. That's pretty pretty good.
Yeah, yep.
Moose, who are you thanking?
I'm going to thank Samson Hare. Samson's from Victoria, British Columbia in Canada. Good at tracking shoes on Strava. That is important, actually. That's a good trait to have. He's 7.05, 35, 33, 120 half man, and he finished 7th at the Victoria Marathon running 2.43. On Saturday night, he ran home drunk and logged it on Strava, 1.92 kilometres, 9.53. Interesting.
Not bad going. What are your thoughts on people logging drunk home runs on Strava?
Garbage.
I count towards the weekly mileage. May as well do it. He's not mucking around. He nearly done 2K in 9 or 10 minutes.
What about walking around an airport?
No, that's not okay.
What about a nude lap of the block at midnight?
That's okay. Any time you're running is okay.
Doing stretches and yoga?
No, not okay.
It's a running, sleeping?
It's a running application.
I had a mate back in the day. You remember Colin Thornton who ran for Geelong?
Yeah, good fella.
Yeah. Oh, legend of a bloke. Had one floor, used to count water running as part of his weekly mileage, aqua jogging. Yeah. Used to log it as miles. This was before Strava. This is when people kept training diaries, and he was adamant that it was proper mileage. He would argue to the death about it.
It's that so hard, what, he'd... Yeah.
So, as in the mileage of, like, if it was a 50-meter pool, how many laps he did?
No, I think he worked out some formula for it. Mm. Like a 30-minute run, a 30-minute aqua jog would be about a 5 or 6K run.
Thanks for support, Samson. Victoria, boys, you've been there as well? I've been there, Victoria Island in Canada. Beautiful spot.
I've only been to Vancouver.
It's near there. You have to take the ferry out there, don't you? Pretty sure.
I don't know.
Vancouver's, that's a beautiful spot as well. If I was going to move to another city, I reckon it'd be Vancouver.
It rained all the time.
Oh, did it? Did you ever run in that park, Stanley Park?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think I've got a few Strava records in there.
Did you? I'm going to thank Matthew Byron from Mount Riverview in New South Wales. He had a crack at the Montefartlek last week in training. I noticed that on his Strava. May enjoy rally driving as well. His display picture is a rally car. He's ran 20:32 for 5K, 44:37 for 10, and 1:39 just recently at the Blackmore Sydney Running Festival Half Marathon in September. So thanks for your support, Matthew, as well. All our patrons, keep the show coming out every week. Cheers for your support. Weekly running news,
thanks,
boys.
Legends.
Yeah, it's very appreciative. Weekly running news, pretty much nothing. Had a look, couldn't find much at all. The one thing I could find was Eliud Kipchoge got named the World Athletics Male Athlete of the Year. So Kenyan's Kipchoge, who's 35. He doesn't look too young for 35, though, does he? Do you reckon that's correct?
Oh, he ain't 35, I can tell you that.
He's only a couple of years old. He's younger than you, Brad.
Yeah, he is.
He got award.
I read this one, Brad, but he looks about 12 years older than you.
Thanks, Moose.
Yeah.
He,
got to throw your bone somewhere.
In 2000 and what year are we? 2019. He won the London Marathon for the fourth time in April before becoming the first athlete to run a marathon in under 2 hours. Kipchoge, who won the Male Athlete of the Year award for the second consecutive year, said he hopes he inspires the human race. I'm just really happy to make history. I hope it was a big inspiration to the next generation. I put this in there, boys, because like when they're doing Male Athletes of the Year, do they look at kind of exhibition events like INEOS 159? Should that be in the criteria? Because other than that, is one London, is he the best athlete we've had in 2019? As a male?
Well, this is, yeah, I heard it, more opinion on this. I mean, if you do it, this, if you looked into it, like who broke world records, who won major championships, who was unbeaten, or who was like the more dominant runner of the year across all distance races. Mm. It's not even, is it even distance? World Athletics, Male Athlete of the Year.
No, no. So for the female, it was Dalila Muhammad.
Yeah,
so
the hurdler.
The four hurdler who broke the world record.
Yeah.
So that was the female equivalent. Yeah, I saw a similar thing on Facebook where the photo that they used to promote it was him finishing the sub 2 hour marathon, which was sort of weird, the fact that it's not an IAAF sanctioned event. So
because like Timothy Cherowit, who the 1500 meter world champ, like he just didn't lose the race for the whole season, won all those diamond leagues, like absolutely smashed the world champs when he ran from the front. Like, I don't know, like
Cheptegei was pretty good.
Cheptegei, yeah.
Very good.
World cross-country and a world champs, didn't he?
Yeah, and then you got to look at all the other events, you know, because it's not just distance. So, yeah.
Which makes the case even stronger that Kipchoge maybe shouldn't get it, because it just, I don't know if it's fair, because he's having an organisation put on an event specially for him, and all the other athletes don't have an opportunity to do that to be able to, you know, break the rules to then break a record in a way, which isn't even a record.
Who votes for it? Is it a vote? Is it a committee?
I'd assume so. Poll? Like, yeah, I'm not sure exactly. Yeah. Who are
they? Obviously not earning points. It's not like a points competition.
No, like World Athletics is the new name for the IAAF. They've rebranded that. So it's coming from the IAAF. Like, this is legit big award ceremony night, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was interesting. I thought it'd be an interesting talking point in there as well. The other thing I want to talk about, Moose, I think our past guest, our friend over in the USA, Gary Town, his Chico State team did a ride in the NCAA's cross country, didn't they?
Well, yeah, and there was a big turnout because I think it was in Sacramento, so there was heaps of Chico alumni and current students went down, and they get a bit silly if you watch it, like get it very silly doing chants and dancing around. I'm not sure I would. I love the idea they're all there, but fuck, they go wild. Like, I'll have to show a video. They go bananas.
Isn't that good? That's what we want.
Oh, it's nuts. Yeah, it's very. I'm not sure whether you get a lot of Australians acting up like that.
Tats all around.
A lot of body paint, face paint. The men came third behind. Oh, the Colorado School of Mines, I think they call it, the one in, they based it out of near Boulder there. They won it. And in the ladies came seventh. So a good year for Chico State and Gary Town, super coach.
Yeah, good work. Patron supporter as well. I think Gary, how good's that? He's coaching his team to success over there as well.
He's probably learning. He probably does Moose Fartlett now.
I reckon. Might just play replays of your race and stuff to the guys. I did hear, I think, did you tweet it? It was like his speech before the race to the guys, which is pretty cool to see that kind of footage.
Well, that pumps you up. I remember like you remember the before you'd play footy and like you'd get around to be a big pump up and you're like, yeah, let's kill people, let's smash them. It's not the same sort of thing, because that was pretty dumb, but it does get you thinking about like not running just for yourself, about running. Like, it's a lot easier to stay motivated when the race goes to shit, when you know that every position counts.
Mm. Andy Buchanan does that on the way down to like the cross country stuff for the Bendigo Bats. He gets at the front of the bus and gives everyone a rev up before we get off. It's really good.
Does a beast get up? Give everyone a rev?
No, he runs for Glenn Huntley. Wrong team.
Does he?
Yeah.
He doesn't run for Bendigo, the beast.
And we're trying to get him back next year. You got to fit him under the salary cap when we're trying to get Croker on board as well.
You guys would probably make it out of Div 3 if you...
Div 2.
If you got the beast back.
Get us on Sportsbet. I think we're paying like $1.15 to win Div 2. Still got to knock over Knox, though. Knox and the Frankston Pigs, I think, are gearing up for a big year as well. So it's going to be competitive back there in Div 2. It's interesting. The hype's already started. Here we are talking about it in November. Anyway, Brad, tell us
when
about
when you're in Div 1, you don't think about or talk about Div 2.
All right, Brad, tell us about the listener question.
All right, so this week's listener question's from Craig Walker. He writes in, why do you think the Australian marathon record has stood for so long? Do you think it will be broken anytime soon? If so, by whom, where, and when?
Oh, good question, Craig.
So I'm not sure whether he's referring to the men's. I'm guessing he is, but I guess we could refer to Benita's Australian record as well.
Yeah. Do you want to go men's first? Go men's first.
Yeah. I think a large part of it's to do with, if you look at our best athletes over the last maybe 10, 15 years, they're probably focused on the track for so long before moving up to the marathon. That's potentially one reason. And then who do I think will break it? I'm going to go out and say Harry Summers within the next couple of years.
Good call, Harry Summers. Moosh, surely you've thought about this over the years. Why have the men not got close to Deke's 208 record?
Well, 207, right?
208, isn't it?
It's the 207.50. Well, yeah, the Boston one
doesn't count, though, does it?
207.50.
Are we playing that? I don't know.
No, I think it does count because they brought the rule in after a particular date or something. So
there's an asterisk, but I'm told
207.50 odd.
Yeah,
at Boston.
Why do I think the Australian? Well, I think same reason as Brad. I reckon we've just the marathon. Probably since Troopy's sort of era has been looked at maybe more like an afterthought at the end of my career rather than like what I'm going to aim for coming out of either college or for instance at when Mona debuted, it was basically like, oh, I finished the 10K, I'll do a marathon now, when he was 23, I think it was. So later in the career, it was a little bit, everyone's a little bit slower. I think now it's the time when you see guys step up. It's perfect time for it too, with money falling out of the track, no diamond leagues for distance runners. The money is on the roads, and it's a good incentive to start your marathoning earlier.
Well, we're seeing that now, aren't we?
I think it'll be broken soon, yeah. I mean, there's no reason. Like, you look at what Mona ran for 5K and 10K, or Mona and even Deke, And guys are running faster than that, and they're running it regularly. So I do think it'll be broken. I'm going to go out and say Pat Tiernan breaks it.
Oh yeah, but he's got to make the move up soon, doesn't he? Whereas like Harry, Brett, and Jack are kind of already jumping into the marathon world.
Yeah, but that doesn't like. He's got to earn a living, like. Oh, I don't know his personal suit, but there's going to be some money on offer when he wants to go at it. And he's shown that he can run a pretty good half without really doing a lot. So I think that's my call anyway.
Mm. Yeah, good call. I agree with that statement. Like, you think about Benny Saint, Craig Mottram, Collis Birmingham were our best three guys over the last kind of 10 years. And they did step up, but not when they're in the peak of their careers. So, it'd be interesting to see what guys do when they're stepping up at kind of 24, 25, 26 and have a good kind of... Then you can have a good run at it. Like, you can have a few attempts over kind of 5 or 6 years and get it right, get a good one out in that time. So I think that's why it stood for so long. And who will break it? Before Jack got that stress fracture, that well, probably would have thought him, like, still the youngest one, the quick debut. I do not know. Maybe Harry Summers, talent-wise, you'd think if he can get everything right, I'm with you probably on that one, Brad. He could be the man to watch. London 2020. Did you know that, boys?
London, I don't know. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the marathon he's targeting. London Marathon to qualify.
That's
for,
confirmed.
Yeah, I think so. If it's not, it is now. I may have to cut that out. We'll see how we go. So women's, who's that one? This one's a bit closer. Like they're getting closer and closer to Benita's. What is it, Brad? 2:22. Do you know the seconds? 2:22.
I can look it up.
Yeah, it'd be great if we check some facts on this show. Do you mind doing that for me?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Moose, Ali going to get it?
Yeah, Ali gets it.
Yeah. Next year.
No bias whatsoever there.
Yeah, no, she get it.
She'd be the youngest of all of them, though, wouldn't she? Like, biggest room, still to have a few more shots at it.
Still building mileage. She's really only hitting consistently like 140 to 150 a week. I think she can go up another 10 to 20 over the next year. She can get faster as well. So she spent a bit of time getting quicker and then move across again. She hasn't been in the right race still for it. Like, Nagoya had to go to the bathroom, wasn't that fit, had another year. New York Hilly ran 2:27. Like, it's a slow course. We know that now. Like, we really do know that. I think she can do it.
Any more comments on that, Brad? You agree?
No, 2:22.36. Yeah, like, you'd have to say either Ellie or Sinead are both within striking distance of it, like, right now.
If New York was a flat race, pacemakers. You ever thought about pacing Ellie to a super fast one, Moose? Like going to Berlin or something with her and just saying, just get on the back of my shoulder for the next 42K and just take her through perfectly?
There's always people to pace. Like,
that's what I meant.
There's a race like at New York in Nagoya, there's people there. Like, the pace was there for her if she wanted it. So it's not like she's missing someone pacing her. I don't think that's the difference.
Yeah. Good one. Moose on the loose, is it back this week?
I'm pretty bloody down.
Like, we're all down this week.
Yeah. No, you're going well, Steve.
Yeah, you can't be down.
I'm running well. But I've got whacking energy. I'm struggling tonight, and I'm putting it out there. A bit flat.
Well, how about I talk about what... So, do you guys got any questions about shoes? Anything at all?
I was thinking about this the other night. You put me on the spot a bit here. But I've got this situation. This is what I've been trialing just behind the scenes. Got this grass track, right, in Moama. So I don't know which pair of shoes to use when I'm doing track work. So I don't want to use the, like, 4%ers because they're just too spongy on the soft grass. And it's more like a cross-country grassy course. And then I tried the Rebel fuel cells last week, and I felt they were just a bit sloppy, like just moving under my feet a bit too much. Do have the options. Like, ideally, the best thing is to go to like a cross country spike, but I don't want to actually rip up my like calves and stuff. Like, I don't want to be super sore from doing, you know, 8 or 10K worth of track work in a pair of spikes. And then tonight I went back to the old like Nike Streaks, but they were a bit lighter, but yeah, still don't feel great. So, what's your recommendation for a pair of what's the best footwear for grass tracks? Surely there's some listeners out there who work on grass tracks.
Well, you need firm. There's no point having tons of cushion when you're running on the grass because you don't need it. And like you said, it feels a bit sloppy. So you hit the deck, you're sinking into the grass and the dirt, and you're also sinking into your shoe. So it's not quite responsive enough. And like having a knit upper, like on the Rebel, I think that may be but is that sort of what you're referring to? Like, maybe not tying you down well enough?
And I actually got a massive blister on one of my toes from like just moving around too much in that and just rubbing against it. Yeah. Great shoe for the road.
So you want something that's really secure on your foot. So you're kind of describing like a waffle. So if remember the waffles you might have worn if you did a little athletics,
yeah.
that would be the perfect shoe for doing track. I mean, for doing grass repeats in, because it's giving you grip. There's no cushion. It's light, low to the ground. That would be an epic. Or the old Streak cross countries. Remember that shoe? I don't know.
I'm looking at a pair at the moment in my wardrobe. Like, they got the plastic plate under them.
Have a look at the back, and if there's two pins, two cross country pins making an X, that's the old cross country.
Hang on, I'll be back in 2 seconds.
We didn't have to do this, but it's important to look at the surface you're running on, because. Yeah.
These got a big tick on the heel, and then it says Bowman on the insole.
Or does it say on the tongue?
Nike Zoom Forever. I've literally had these in my wardrobe for like, and it's fully plastic on the bottom, but then like, yeah, no spikes, but a whole plate on the bottom.
A plastic plate without spikes.
I don't know where they come from. I thought they were like a cross-country spike without the spikes, if that makes sense.
Do they have lugs?
What are they?
Like the grippy bit of the sole?
Kind of. Like it's got just like, yeah, plasticky things sticking out. I'll take a photo and send them to you when we're finished.
Yeah, no, send it now. Send the photo now. I'll see if I can have a look.
Nike
anyway,
Zoom Forever. Yeah, might roll those out. They're a bit muddy. I've worn them sometime. Hey.
Moose, I've got I guess it's more of a statement more than anything. So recently, as you know, I've gone back to doing some runs in a Nike structure. And so I would class the Nike structure. It's obviously a supportive shoe, but the foam that's in those shoes, I would say, is more old school compared to a lot of the shoes that I've run in for the last maybe 3 years. And I'm not sure whether it's... because the shoe's so chunky, or whether the foam that's in those shoes, I don't feel like I get anything back out of the ground in those shoes compared to what I've been running in the last couple of years. So I'm starting to realize how much the foam in these new shoes actually improves you as a runner.
Well, it's the foam and also the geometry. So the geometry or the shape of that shoe is pretty straight and stiff. There's some shoes out there now, like for instance that New Balance shoe that you've been wearing, like it has a nice little rocker, I reckon, under the ball of the foot, so you feel like when you hit the deck it kind of gives you a little bit of momentum forward rather than just hitting the deck to a really stiff flat feel, which the structure is designed to control the foot and guide the foot, I guess, have more of an influence over how much pronation there is or how much your foot pronates. So those sort of shoes are more dynamic and they allow your foot to do more what it wants to do rather than control it. And the foot's designed to roll, and the foot is designed to pronate. Sometimes it can create some dramas, especially the issue you've been having. Yeah. And so that's why they're not performance-focused shoes. But there is a real trend these days from all the brands to make shoes feel lively and poppy, and that's how I describe them to people now. It's like this shoe is fun to run in, and it doesn't feel like it's trying to influence your foot mechanics. It feels like it works with your foot mechanics. So a lot of these more cushion neutral shoes with a little bit of rocker, they're what I'm loving right now.
Yeah, you definitely run faster in those shoes. Or you get more back from the ground.
Yeah, you do. And there's like some of these foams you're talking about, like they do have more return than the standard EVAs that are found in a structure. But they're also can be unstable for people. Mm. So if you go too far down the chain, like those Peg Turbos, that Zoom X they use on top of a bed of or a second layer of the React foam, they're two pretty soft foams. So if you don't have like, or if your threshold for how much your foot and ankle does work is low, those shoes will stir you up. We got a few people who have run into dramas with that shoe, myself included, and you included, actually.
Yeah, but it's funny how because that was all I ever used, like that, because all we ever used to run in was the EVA sort of foam, and then we've had something different. Then you go back to that like a couple of years later, and you go, oh man, how did I run in these for so long? That sort of that feel.
It was what it was, and they felt a ton better than what the shoes 5 years before that felt like.
Yeah, evolution of the shoe.
Evolution.
You should see the ship we're about to see. There are some, like, so I'm off the conference this week. I've seen most of it, but there are some exciting shoes. Like, everyone's making fun shoes now.
Yeah, pretty cool time to be alive and running. Did you see that photo getting around Twitter today, the Alpha Fly?
Oh, I saw the green and black one.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
You're saying autumn next year for the pros.
I don't know. Because I haven't been told officially. I'm not actually making I can't get in much trouble. But I reckon that I've heard several people say around London Marathon time you'll see them.
Yeah, Boston and London. They'd be stupid not to. Two biggest races of the year. Maybe.
Yeah.
Did you see that photo I just sent you?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I remember this colorway, but I don't remember the shoe.
No, I haven't got that colorway, but yeah.
Oh, what color is yours?
I got black and fluoro green.
Ah, yeah, right.
Might test them out next week. Give you an update. What's coming up? We got this Inside Running podcast does New York Marathon 2020. We've hit a couple of really big snags behind the scenes, haven't we, boys?
Your 50th anniversary hasn't helped us.
And when we first started running our mouths coming up with this idea, we did not realize it was the 50th anniversary and tickets would be at a premium. So we've tried to partner with Moose.
To be fair, the agencies we've been talking to, they didn't know or expect it either.
Yeah, and a couple of people, like agencies, you know, thought they'd be able to get X amount of tickets, and New York Road Runners are getting slammed from everywhere. With everyone asking them for tickets because it's the 50th year, and it's looking very unlikely at this stage that we'll be going on a trip over to New York in 2020. We still definitely want to do it in the future, so maybe 2021, or maybe we'll go to another marathon location. The door's still open a bit to get some stuff sorted there. So people on that emailing list will, we'll keep you guys updated. We're kind of just as disappointed as I'm sure some of you guys are. I know my wife Carly was ready to kill me yesterday when I told her it looks like we won't be going to New York. That was going to be her comeback marathon, and I think she was booking flights and organising my mum to be the babysitter and all that kind of stuff. We were locked in, ready to go. So we're super disappointed as well that we haven't been able to pull it off this year. But we want to do it properly, and we want to do it, with a good group of people and make sure everything's sorted rather than just winging it and having people. There was, a couple of options where we could have had people staying at different hotels, and it wouldn't have worked. It would have been super messy. So we want to do it properly. Anything else to add there? Brad, you've been doing a bit of work behind the scenes there as well.
So pretty much as you said, agencies thought they were going to get a certain amount of tickets, and often it was halved. Which they'd obviously already allocated those out beforehand. I guess there's a few options, potentially a Berlin followed by a Kit Kat Club tour.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah, so if listeners were interested in that, I think getting tickets for Berlin would be a little bit easier just because it's not the 50th anniversary and all that sort of jazz. So, so there's still options if listeners were interested.
We'll flick out some details. Inside Running Podcast does Kit Kat Club plus Berlin. It's got a better ring to it as well. Moose, anything else to add? You've been shooting emails and phone calls and stuff all over the place as well.
No, everyone wants to get on board for us next year, but nobody can get tickets. Even though they all thought they would be fine to get tickets, it's just, I think the amount that got given out was slashed considerably to the to the people we've been talking to. So it's a little embarrassing, I reckon, on our end.
Yeah, and we've had a real big eye-opener to what it looks like behind the scenes of, you know, big marathons and how they allocate the tickets and how the tour companies then put packages together. And, yeah, the options, how people get into these races is quite interesting to see behind the scenes. So we'll probably talk about that in a bit of the future. More things that are coming up, boys. Fukuoka Marathon's this Sunday. And we've got, I know Tom DeCano and Nick Harmon are definitely racing. Do we have an update on Benny St. Lawrence?
No, Benny's not running it.
Not running?
No.
No, I don't think
injured?
So. No, he's not injured. I just don't think. I think he's decided to do something next year. I read somewhere that potentially he'd be doing Zatopek and then maybe a Japanese marathon early next year.
Biwa.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Possibly, but yeah, I don't think you'll see him on the start line on Sunday.
It's going to be a big race for Tom and Nick. They both ran 1-2 at Melbourne Half Marathon, and they're both quick. And, yeah, it could be some big times dropping from those boys. Do you want to throw a prediction out at all, Brad?
I think Nick Harmon is going to run a substantial PB. I was chatting to Tom's coach, actually, on Saturday night, Gary Howard, and he's predicting something big from Nick because he said, you know, they had a sprint finish in Melbourne and he knows that Tom's in tip-top shape. So I'll go around 2:13 for both.
Okay. Moose, any comments there, predictions?
Well, Tom's got runs on the board. So he's run 2:14 before and we know only fucking legends run that time. Nick's last marathon didn't really go to plan, so it would be playing on his mind a fair bit, I reckon, knowing that the last one was such a, like, it was really a disaster for him. He ran 2:23 or something and had to walk for stages or stop, I think, and so he's going out there surely going, geez, I hope it's not like that again. And maybe that's a good thing for him and he respects it and he goes out really cautious and comes home strong. So I don't know. I think Tom's in good shape. He's a pretty smart dude. Just got to stay away from his kids for a few months. I don't know how he's going. He's probably sick. So I'm tipping Nick. Nick runs. Well, I hope Nick goes out nice and cautious, comes home strong because his best race is in a few years still, I think. And Tom might as well have a crack. I mean, got the Olympics coming up, a few blokes maybe injured.
Yeah, Matt said in this question, actually, if we could just do a bit of an update of the men's marathoning kind of situation for Tokyo. Well, it's not at Tokyo, but it will be the Tokyo Olympics, considering we always talk about females and how they're all kind of situated for their qualifiers. But at the moment, we've got Brett and Jack with the 2:11:30 times. Liam Adams was 6 seconds over with the 2:11:36 at the Gold Coast. I've heard no news on the guy who was in front of him that tested positive. So if that result does get rubbed out, Liam would go up to fifth, which is a Olympic qualifier if you're top five at a gold label marathon, which the Gold Coast is. But all this means very little at the moment because Athletics Australia are yet to release the qualifying standards documents for the Tokyo Olympics. So they might just say we're only going with time. They might say we're going with time and the gold label thing. They could really do anything here. There's been years where they've changed the time, hasn't it? Like they've set their own time, not the IAAF time. Pretty sure it was that New Zealand
sure
do that.
Solid now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they'd use it I mean, there's two ways to get in. I think they pick half the field on auto qualifiers and then the rest go to roll down spots.
Yeah, but I think there's that many people. Sean Whip, I was talking to him about this the other day, there's that many people that have got the auto qualifiers that there'll be no room for the people who have the roll down spots with the gold label stuff or the roll down position. That makes sense.
Roll down position is ranking stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where we get.
I'll read this out actually. So he said 70 men already have the sub 2:11:30 Olympic qualifier on a 3 per nation basis. Therefore, world ranking points may not have a selection-based effect on the Olympics, barring the national selection criteria, etc. So then I
that's a lot of men
that is
to be under that time, considering that in the Olympics, like there's a like the last Olympics, I think there was like 100 men, and the qualifying time was 2:19.
Yeah, everyone's wearing the next percent these days, though. So everyone's improved so much. Because then I replied to him saying, so if Moose finds a really weak gold label race and comes top 10, he won't get a start with the roll down if somebody else was injured. And then he kind of said, well, that's where we need to see a criteria for the Olympics, which we don't have yet.
So, we need a criteria, but that's also an auto. Auto spot. The roll down applies to the rankings for those without auto spots.
Yeah, so the auto, but that's if Athletics Australia put that in their selection criteria, is the point he's making. Which you'd assume they would. Well, now they follow the IFFF, hopefully. But anyway, to answer Matt's question, at the moment we need the third person to run under 2:11:30 to guarantee a spot. And then Liam Adams be kind of sitting in that situation waiting to see what happens for the Gold Coast or reloading to try and go 6 seconds quicker. And then you got
he'll definitely try and go faster.
Yeah. And then you got Tom and Nick and Moose and who else is named? Parry.
Yeah.
Benny Saint. There's a few names still to throw around. Joel Tobin White. Yep. Andy Buchanan stepping up to the marathon, I heard. He'll be there.
Pussy.
And that's
Pussy
where this weekend, like, do you think Tom will actually go for 2:11:30 this weekend?
What do you got to lose?
No, I don't think he will.
You don't think would you go for, like, would you just go out 2:12 pace and then, yeah, at least you're close enough if you want to have a crack at it then.
What did he run at Melbourne?
Yeah, well, he jogged the first 11K.
Yeah, no,
he ran 64 something. So you'd, I think he could go through in 66 dead and be feeling all right. Yeah.
And see, this is exactly what happened to Australian marathoners for such a long time when the qualifying standard was set pretty high, that guys like Tom, who maybe on the day could run, I don't know, 2:12:30, but it's like, well, 2:12:30 is not going to get me on the team. I need to run 2:11:30. And they'd often go for that and then would fade and run 2:15, 2:16. And that happened to a lot of our best runners for a long time there.
Mm.
It's a recurring theme in the interviews that we do.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people just put it on the line and didn't care about running 2:15. They want to run, like you said, 2:11, 2:12. I know it. Yeah.
That's
why it was the best when they set it at like 2:18. Just gave so many guys a chance. Like you, Moose, like you can dip, you can go 2:18, then you go 2:16, then you go 2:14, rather than having trying to run 2:12 in every one of those races and blowing up and running 2:25.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll see what happens there. See what happens this Sunday. We'll be talking about it next week. A bit of Steigen hashtag one news before we move on. A couple more teams announced. Kaser and Deakin University. Two more teams. I think they still need two more, though. So
if it's Kaser.
Kaser. What did I say? Kaser. Even Brett knows I would have stuffed that up. He's even put in here. This is how you pronounce it. Kaser. Strength and conditioning, aren't they? Gym?
Yeah.
Told you I was flat tonight. They're a gym.
They're a gym, but they use special, like, these guys have like a theory, I guess, on strength work and physio work and stuff.
Help Brett Coleman, he reckons, helping him run well at the moment, and they've even appointed him coach of their team, so that's something we've got to watch out for, boys. Brett Coleman coaching that team. Two more teams they need, so if you're a business owner out there, know someone who's got a bit of money they want to throw out to get a team, this is what you get. You get naming rights for the four girls and the four guys on your team. You get your team uniforms, you get a bit of promotion leading up to the event. You get your own marquee just beyond the finish line where there's like free food and drinks for the nights as well. So boys, we got a few of those tickets. We got to fill up our marquee as well. Not sure who's going to be sitting in there. Might be you two boys if you can't get your bodies right for to be on the start line.
I'm going to be the coach of our team.
Yeah, I've actually got some news on that as well. We had a very, there was whispers that Jack Rayner will be there on the night and may be interested in, because he's not competing with that stress, he may be interested in coaching our team actually. He's made contact Yes, to Dom, supposedly, that he could stand in and coach for the night. And you get a chance to win $3,000 if your team wins. So, yeah, if that's you, if you've got a business or you know someone who froths running and wants a team named after him, get in touch with the Steigen boys. And, yeah, that's coming around pretty quick. Brad or Moose, who's doing the interview this week? Which one are we going with?
Go Moose, I reckon.
Go Moose's one. Tell us about yours, Moose.
Yesterday I spoke to Alan McCubbin and Steph Gaskell, both registered sports dietitians. They just worked on presenting. They contributed maybe, I don't even know what the setup was there, to a paper that's coming out in January around heat and nutrition. So training in the heat, things to watch out for, basically some protocol based on science, not myth. It's going to be applicable to the general punter as well as to elite runners. So we discuss some things like around heat and nutrition. Pretty interesting, actually.
They both know their stuff, don't they? Alan's been on a couple of times and you've spoken about Steph a couple of times helping you out. I've only listened to the first bit, but it's good to listen.
Yeah. Alan speaks. He's done his PhD in this stuff. Oh, no, sorry. Is it PhD? Yeah, he did his master's, maybe something like that.
Doctorate, PhD, he's everything, I think. He'd be the most qualified guys in Australia with this stuff.
Yeah, he talks about sodium and then, anyway, I'll let you listen to it.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Thanks for doing that one. Thanks, listeners, for listening. Hopefully we're a bit more up and about next week, a bit flat tonight. See you, boys. Anything coming up in your life that's exciting between now and next week?
Oh, going to my brother's wedding down the coast on Saturday, so a few days down the coast will be nice.
Don't sound too excited, Bradley.
Family punch on after a few beers.
Nah,
that's your brother who's started running, isn't it?
I'll be well behaved. No, it's the other one.
Oh, the other one. The one that's not a Patreon supporter.
Nah, the one that's running, he's just had his third kid, so he's not doing too much running at the moment.
Not doing too much running. Not doing too much sleeping either, I suppose. Yeah, right, that's exciting, Brad. Moose, what are you doing? You going to this conference thing?
Yeah, well, I'm off to the Melbourne tomorrow, so I'm gonna look at shoes, and then I'm gonna run with the Hunter group tomorrow on Thursday morning. So I've got out my best looking, coolest running gear because those guys are pretty dapper runners. It's going to be a little bit nervous. It'll be like seeing all these Instagram famous people. I'm going to go down there with a few of the guys from the conference. And Ali's going to come up, do a workout on the tan Friday morning. So I'll join her for that.
Are you going along as a special guest to the training session? Remember how, like, I think Brett and Jack went down one time?
No, I'm just going to go for a run. Oh, just going to join the group.
Okay. Yep. Right, going down there signing autographs and stuff. I see you were writing articles for Runner's Tribe magazine coming out.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was it. It was during a busy time in my life.
Yeah, all right. Enjoy this interview. See you next week, boys. Do it all again.
See you, boys.
See you, fellas.
Fractal Headwear has just released their boldest collection to date. They have turned both performance and aesthetics up a notch by combining updated, premium fabrics with striking colorways. Their latest range is designed to keep you cool in the hottest of summer running conditions and has been tried and tested by hundreds of runners just like you. Their all-new Flow Mesh fabric brings to the running world the ultimate in headwear breathability and is available now. Fractal pride themselves on being locally owned and operated with a passion for creating products that represent our running community. Based out of the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, co-owners Matt and Matt have begun forging a brand that extends further than just a product. Their latest release is a celebration of an endless summer, and you're all invited. Head over to fractal.com.au to find out why runners like you now choose Fractal. We'll be right back.
Okay, I'm here with Alan McCubbin and Steph Gaskell. They are both accredited sports dietitians from Monash University. You've probably heard Steph's name before because she helped me when I was preparing for the World Championships marathon in Doha. And Alan, he's also been a guest on our show before. Is that right, Alan?
Yeah, a couple of times now.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Welcome, Steph.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Yep. Why do they call you sub 2 hours, Steph?
I don't know. The boys were mucking around and then I made up this story about shoes and me running a sub 2 hour marathon. And so now I've got my name sub 2 hour.
Oh, you made a claim.
Yep.
All right. Now, Alan and Steph are here to chat about heat and in particular training and performing in the heat. Alan, I'll let you introduce what you're here to chat about today.
Yeah, sure. So obviously there's a big focus at the moment. Obviously we're coming into summer in Australia, so big component of, you know, what it takes to train and perform well in the heat. But thinking ahead, obviously we've got the Tokyo Olympics next year, and that's been a big focus, although that's kind of taken the edge off a bit, moving the marathon, you know, north to Sapporo, which is announced, you know, a month or so ago. And then obviously, you know, recently we had yourself over in Doha for the World Champs. So there's been a lot of focus in the last sort of 6 to 12 months on this issue of performing in the heat. So because of that, Sports Dietitians Australia had their recent conference in October, and that was the topic for that entire conference. And as a result of that, they've actually produced a position statement which sort of covers everything you want to know really about nutrition for training and competition in the heat. And that's going to be out available in January in the International Journal of Sport Nutrition and Exercise Metabolism. But the good news is that sounds big and scary and academic, but there's no, this will be an open access paper, so you don't have to pay to access it. So anyone in the world can download it. And it's also written in, it's a pretty easy read compared to a lot of academic papers, and it's quite practical. So it does go through some theoretical stuff at the start, but there's a lot of practical stuff in there, including a massive long table of all sort of the practical recommendations.
And so who is this aimed at? So what, this paper was produced for the benefit of everybody, or was it produced like under direction from Athletics Australia or something like that?
No, so it was produced on behalf of Sports Diet Dietitians Australia, but that said, the target audience of the paper is not just sports dietitians. It's really, you know, exercise physiologists, coaches, trainers, and even potentially athletes themselves. Really, anyone who's interested in the science of, you know, performing in the heat and what you can do from a nutrition perspective to improve that.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. Sounds relevant. It's getting hot now. Yeah. We're all wondering what we should do. How many shots, tablets we should put in our drink bottle?
That's the one.
So I guess we'll start with something pretty basic and maybe an underlying concept. How does heat affect performance?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a really relevant one because it really depends on what sort of performance you're talking about. So there's some data was collected, it was quite a few years ago now, but they sort of compared times in athletics championship events from, you know, very hot events to very cool events. And what you generally find is that the sprint events, actually you perform better in the heat. So the 100, the 200, and possibly even the 400, you tend to perform better in a hot environment. The middle distance events, sort of 1800 up to about 5K, definitely 18 and 1500. Generally, there's not much difference. And once you start to get up to sort of 5 to 10K plus, then generally you perform worse in the heat because obviously you're reducing all this body heat that your body's got to get rid of. And that becomes a challenge once you start generating that heat over a prolonged period of time.
So why does it improve in performance in short distance running?
It's to do with the temperature of your muscles, essentially. So if you think about, you know, sprinters will always warm up before they run, or, you know, most people will warm up before they exercise, and you're trying to warm up the muscle. In a hot environment, the muscle's already warmer than it would be in a cooler environment, and that basically facilitates all the biochemical bits and pieces and all the contractions and things that go on at sort of the muscle fiber level that help you essentially produce power.
So What are we talking about, 5 minutes? Is that about the time before it starts to worsen?
It seems to be. So the analysis they did suggests that, you know, everything up to 400 meter tends to be better. 1800 and 1500 are pretty similar. 5K maybe fractionally worse, and then sort of 10K onwards starts to get worse. So yeah, it's probably around that kind of 15 minute mark, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a specific temperature when it starts to affect, or how do we rate like the threshold where heat becomes a problem for us?
Yeah, that's kind of a million-dollar question, and we had a great presentation actually at the conference on this from Ollie Jay, who's a researcher up in Sydney, and he's done a whole lot of work in this area looking at the effects of temperature versus the effects of humidity and airflow and all of these things. And, you know, we were talking off-air before the fact that, you know, today it's about 27, 28 degrees in Melbourne, but it's, you know, it's a dry 27, 28 degrees. It's not very humid, whereas if you went up to Cairns and it was 27 or 28 degrees, you'd really feel the difference in terms of how you're working. And that's a really important point, is that we can't just look at a weather forecast at the degrees Celsius and say that's the effect it's going to have on us, because the humidity greatly impacts on how much our sweat can evaporate, and that has an impact on how effective that sweat is at keeping us cool. Things like airflow, so just how windy it is on the day, will have an effect as well. Not so much relevant to running, but in other sports, how much clothing and protective equipment you have to wear, all of those things will play into it. So you can't really just have a number and say, you know, above this degrees it's a problem, because there's all of these factors going into it. And what Ollie's team do is actually have an algorithm, and it's custom built for different sports, where they plug all of these values into it and create what they call a heat stress index. And they've created that. If anyone watches the Australian Tennis Open, you might have seen the heat stress index, and at times they've closed the roof because of it, or stopped play on the outside courts because of it, or taken extra drink breaks and so on. So yeah, there's a fair bit that goes into it from a physiology perspective, rather than just saying this is the number.
So Steph, you watched the women's marathon in Doha. Where does that rate on the stress index? Did anyone put that in the calculator?
Did they, Alan? I don't think they did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Ollie's created a stress index calendar specifically for running. I'm not sure other people have. But yeah, I mean, the fact that there wasn't blazing sun shining down would have helped. But then obviously it was hot, and was it more humid for the women's race?
So it was humid. Yeah, they got the worst of it.
Yeah, so that makes a big difference.
Yeah, no, because that was one of the big differences between the men's race and the women's race, is the temperature wasn't a big difference, but I think the humidity was hugely different.
Yeah. And basically when you sweat, the way it cools you down is by evaporating off your skin, and it does that by having a difference between the humidity of the air and the humidity on your skin. And so if that difference isn't as great because the air is very humid, then you don't get as much evaporation and you don't get the same cooling effect from the sweat that you do produce. So it tends to just beat up on your skin and stay there. And you know, anyone running in a sort of a tropical environment would appreciate that compared to running in a dry environment.
And I had a lot of people actually concerned about my health during the week leading in, because the media got hold of it and they're putting up images of people passing out, that kind of thing. So there were actually like family members saying, hey, is this safe for you to do this? What are the health risks or the real dangers with running in the heat like this?
Yeah, it's a bit of a continuum, and there's kind of three sort of main medical conditions that are kind of described. You've got sort of exertional heat illness at the lower end of the spectrum, and that can be, you know, as you exercise and your body heats up, you tend to dilate your blood vessels so they get bigger, and that's well and good, but what tends to happen is your blood pressure starts to fall. You rely on your calf muscles contracting to pump blood back up from your feet back towards your circulation, back to your heart. And so what can happen is if you suddenly stop running, you can, you know, you have that blood pooling at your feet and you can actually faint because of it. It's called heat syncope. And that can happen, you know, anything around sort of 38.5 up to, you know, 40 degrees body temperature, that is.
Yeah.
Not air temperature, and then as you sort of go through that continuum, you can start to get, you know, damage to organs. but you need a more sort of sustained, probably 39 and a half plus degree temperature, you know, for a period of time for that to occur. And Steph can talk about some of the gastrointestinal implications of that as well. And then at the extreme end of the scale is what we call exertional heat stroke, which is all usually but not always associated with a body temperature above 40. And that's where you get quite a range of issues happening in terms of affecting your conscious state. People can get seizures and, you know, become unconscious. You can have organ failure and all sort of nasty stuff. Your gut barrier between, you know, what's inside your intestinal tract and the blood breaks down, and you get bits and pieces coming across into your blood and causing infections and all sorts of nasty stuff. And that's really a medical emergency. But that's very much the extreme end of the scale, and you don't see that very commonly.
So as a runner, does that, like, our body will not let us run any further to try to avoid this happening, right? That's so when we see Callum Hawkins falling over in the Comm Games, and the, like, everyone at Doha and the marathon is just basically, I saw it even in the walks events, people just falling over. Is that their body stopping them from putting themselves into more harm?
It could well be. I mean, unless you have, you know, a rectal thermometer on hand at the time and a whole bunch of other medical kit, it's hard to say exactly what's going on just watching on TV. But, yeah, that would be probably towards the sort of the mild to moderate end of that spectrum. You know, exertional heat stroke, as I said, is pretty rare. And it's, you know, it's a life-threatening condition that requires, like, immediate cooling. But as I said, it doesn't actually happen that often in reality. There have been examples historically of where that's happened, and it has been associated with actually some banned substances over the years. So things like amphetamines actually sort of block that fatigue signal from a very high body temperature and allow you to push yourself too far. And there was an example of that in the Tour de France back in the 1960s, a guy from the UK who actually died on one of the big climbs there from exertional, well, thought from exertional heat stroke and evidence of amphetamine use there.
Yeah. Does that happen at music festivals when they dance all day in the sun?
It could, and that is definitely a risk. It's the sort of things that you have to be careful about, yeah. All jokes aside, yeah.
Steph, and, oh, sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, you know, probably, like, a lot of, you know, athletes in that environment, in that heat, like, if we did have a rectal thermometer up their bum just to check their temp, you know, their temperature probably is, and there has been some people recorded as getting it over, you know, the 40 degrees or so. And even in the race walkers, like, there's already been some research in race walkers. And although some people would think, you know, they probably can't get their temp up that high, they definitely do get it over, you know, that sort of 39 degrees or so. And everyone's kind of got, you know, a different ability to thermoregulate. And obviously it's also dependent on how well they acclimatise, etc., and what strategies they're putting in. But we know that when that body temperature gets to, like, you know, 39 degrees or so, that's where we can get, you know, a reasonable amount of damage to the gut. And like, with the damage to the gut, we can also get the gut not functioning as well, which then will have an impact on how well we can, you know, digest and break down food and absorb our nutrients that we're getting. And you know, the longer duration events, then, you know, the, I guess, the longer time we have to do more and more damage. So when we're thinking about, you know, nutrition strategies for performing in the heat, like, we're also thinking about, well, how can we prevent or reduce the impact the heat has on the gut as well? Because that also will impact on your performance.
Yeah, because you were, when you drew up my fuel strategy for the marathon, it was much less than what I would normally take. And you mentioned it was due to the temperature. It was going to affect how I could absorb it. So I might be able to take it on, but it wouldn't get used properly. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's so in terms of the during race nutrition strategy, it's like with carb intake, and, you know, like, you always see on gels or on products how they say, okay, like, the standard recommendation might be have a gel within, you know, 45 minutes or so. That's like just this kind of blanket recommendation, which real like it's not individualized, and so each person obviously has a different ability to, you know, break down the carbs and oxidize it, which is going to vary depending on people's diet, on their fitness level, etc. And then also carb intake, we also need to consider how much we recommend someone depending on their environment. So, you know, whether you're when you're in a hot condition compared to cooler, generally in the cooler condition, you should be able to tolerate, you know, more carbohydrate, because also we're not getting as, we've got less risk of being more dehydrated, I guess, as well, less impact on the gut as well. You know, it's also going to vary in terms of when we're racing or training at altitude, you know, that also will influence our carb intake. So for you, that's where like you typically we're getting in, like you get in a reasonable amount of carb per hour, which is fantastic. But I was also just thinking, okay, like I also just want to think about minimizing any risk for you as well. So that's where I kind of like we looked at increasing your carb intake, particularly leading in the couple of days leading in, to take advantage of making sure you're entering into that race kind of, you know, super saturated with carbs in your muscles, so that then it wasn't too much of an issue if we did need a dial down. And we also did that sort of pre-carb, you know, bolus before you started racing.
Yeah.
But you ended up doing an awesome job and being able to tolerate, I think, you know, we worked out roughly maybe around sort of towards the 80, maybe 70 to 80 grams of carbs an hour, just because I guess also we had that ability of having those frequent aid stations as well.
And
the important thing from the gut perspective for me, and from what we know in research, is we want to not overwhelm your gut. So small frequent intake is really good, because it's easier for your gut to kind of take on, but then it also helps with, I guess, promoting blood flow in a way to the gut as well, which is another thing that we want to do. So so I guess that's kind of, you know, we can always have sort of this guideline, and but then it's, you know, when you come to race day, at least you know what you can kind of work between.
Yeah, and I think we'll do another episode on the guidelines for normal conditions, or and we'll talk about that carb load more. It sounds a lot better than it actually is. Everyone's thinking that sounds fantastic, but when you actually break down what foods you're eating and that when that carb saturation, it's actually not that enjoyable. So we'll chat about that in a different episode. But from this paper coming out, do you think it's going to change how people prepare for Tokyo than how they prepared for Doha? Is there anything kind of groundbreaking in it?
I was going to say, I think there's a couple of things that are not necessarily that new, but probably people haven't necessarily heard that much about. I was just going to backtrack one sec, and I was going to say one of the myths or misconceptions about heat be that the longer the event is, the higher your body temperature gets, but often it's actually the reverse, because if you think about it, when you're running, say, a 10K or a half marathon, you know, your pace is obviously higher, and your pace is the rate that essentially you're going to be contracting your muscles, producing energy, and that's the rate that you're producing heat at as well. So generally, if you measure someone's, you know, rectal temperature as they cross the finish line of a 10K or a half marathon, it's generally going to be higher than a marathon, and probably higher again than an ultra. So that's one side of the story. And the other part is how long you're exposed to that higher temperature. So, you know, Steph mentioned that the gut issues above 39. And what we tend to see is you have to be over 39 for at least a couple of hours to see that sort of breakdown issue occur. If you're at that for, you know, only an hour or so, it's much less of an issue. But coming back to sort of the novel stuff or what's new, I think there's a couple of areas. One is, you know, we've sort of talked about hydration for years. I think we're in a stage now in hydration research where that's becoming a bit more practical, hopefully. And I think people are sort of hopefully coming in from the two extremes. There's always been this debate in hydration for years about, you know, how much you should drink and whether you should drink to thirst or you should drink to a plan and that sort of thing. And I think we're slowly starting to come towards a bit of a consensus. I don't think we're there yet, but we're getting there. I think some of the pre-exercise hydration stuff, which you guys can maybe talk about, you know, what happened for you in Doha in terms of the sodium loading and so on. Some of the other stuff that's been around since probably the Beijing Olympics is the pre-cooling, like using ice slushies and stuff before exercise, but it's still something that not everyone knows about necessarily. Mm-hmm. But probably the newer areas, one is the use of glycerol to rather than sodium to pre, you know, hyperhydrate or overhydrate prior to exercise. And glycerol was something that was actually banned by WADA, I think it was about 2010 or 2011 from memory. And so a lot of the research in that area kind of stopped. And the reason it was banned is they thought it could be a masking agent for other substances. So not that it was a problem in itself. But they, you know, did some follow-up research and realized that actually, no, it wasn't a problem. So that was then taken off the banned substances list only about 18 months ago. So we may see a big use of glycerol again come Tokyo. And then the final area is an interesting one, and it's changing, not changing your body temperature at all, but changing your perception of body temperature using menthol. So anyone who's had like Fisherman's Friends or any of those sort of lollies that have a lot of menthol in them, you get that sort of cooling feeling in your mouth when you have it. You can apply menthol gel on your skin and things like that, which also gives you a cooling sensation. So you can actually change your perception of heat without changing the actual body temperature that you're running at.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was interesting at in Doha to see only maybe four countries pre-cooling, like using ice, but out of everybody, and they're the ones that sort of had the physiologists working for them, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I watched an African team run for like 15 minutes beforehand in full tracksuits, which is kind of doing the opposite of what they were, what you guys would sort of suggest for them to do. But they weren't the ones that actually did that well though. So that was interesting.
And certainly listening to, a couple of the race walkers in Doha that did quite well. And, you know, they were saying, you know, all the media and people were complaining about the heat and da, da, da. And he's saying, well, we all knew it was going to be hot. Like, if you're not prepared for that, you just haven't done your homework.
Yeah.
Like, there's all these strategies out there, you know, with possibly the exception of menthol, none of them are particularly new. They just haven't been taken up by a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Australians with Brent Valance, you guys probably know Brent. He was actually experimenting with glycerol. I think there was a study being done, glycerol loading before the run. You, Steph, you had me take on about 2,500 milligrams of sodium 2 hours before the run.
And I guess, yeah, so Alan's the expert in anything sort of sodium and I guess hydration-wise, but I knew that, you know, he's just recently completed his PhD in the area, so, you know, whenever I do a nutrition plan for something like this, I'm always, you know, trying to get other people's input as well, where I know they're researching. So this was something Alan had mentioned to me. So I knew it wouldn't taste great. So that's why I wanted you to, you know, do a bit of trialing with it. But it's basically, I guess Alan can add in a lot more here, but it's to help with your thermoregulation. So it's to help, I guess, would you say, increase your plasma volume, which is just going to help reduce your overall sort of thermal strain, Alan?
Yeah, pretty much. So, I mean, I guess the idea behind the sodium loading is you're trying to get more hydrated, so get more water into the body. But, you know, if you just drink plain water, one of two things is going to happen. You're either just going to pee it straight out again and you really haven't achieved anything and it's been inconvenient to you, or in some exercise situation, it's like when you're over drinking, you can have all that water move into the cells and cause hyponatremia, or, you know, the symptoms of hyponatremia, which is sort of a dangerous medical condition, which you don't want that either. So the purpose of adding the sodium to the water is that it basically, you're trying to get that mixture of water and sodium so it's retained. Exactly right. So you're trying to get the concentration of sodium within that water about the same as what the concentration of sodium is in your blood. And then, you know, the body will keep it in that that fluid compartment of the body, not pee as much of it out and not shunt it on into the inside the cells. And so the idea is by keeping that extra water, you can tolerate obviously a greater degree of fluid loss before you're quote unquote dehydrated. And as Steph said, you know, if you've got more water in your body, it's just basic physics. It takes more heat to heat the body up.
So for the, we're coming into a warm season. If I wake up in the morning, I go and have a wee and I've got really dark urine, should I be drinking water before my run, or should I have an electrolyte straight away, electrolyte tablet with my drink or Gatorade or something like that?
That's a very good question. The problem with urine colour is it's not always very reliable to assess hydration status. So if you've done a big run the day before, for example, then your urine's probably a pretty unreliable indicator of what's going on. But that said, if you're well rested and you haven't done anything the day before, or you just had a, you know, an easy run in the morning or something, and it's, you know, full 24 hours later, then it's probably okay.
Which would not be Julian. He would have done a double run, I'm sure.
Oh, there you not go. Lately. It's more like the beer-related darkness.
So I think one of the difficulties with interpreting urine is that people assume that urine's a reflection of what's going on in the body, whereas urine is really what the kidneys are trying to do to keep the body in balance, if that makes sense. And so just because you've got dark urine doesn't necessarily mean that you're dehydrated. It can in a lot of situations, but there are examples, like during heat acclimation, for example, you're always going to have dark urine because your body's retaining more water, and so it's not peeing it out. It doesn't mean you're more dehydrated. In fact, you're becoming, you know, progressively better hydrated, but it doesn't necessarily mean you'll have clear pee. So yeah, urine's an interesting one. It's, you know, it's been used for decades. It's cheap. It's easy to do. Anyone can do it. But there are a few caveats in terms of using urine colour, or even some of the more sophisticated measures, urine specific gravity and stuff that some clinicians might use. Is still you have to interpret it with caution.
So, how much, like, in terms of hydrating during the day, for instance, if I'm at work during the day, I have a training session at 5 p.m. after work, should I be drinking pure water from a drink bottle? Should I be using electrolytes? Does this depend on my diet? Because this is a very confusing topic.
Yeah. So we talk about this in the consensus statement or position statement. For example, post-exercise, there's been some great work done at Griffith University up in Queensland that's shown basically you can just drink normal water as long as you're having food with that, like your normal meal or something within an hour or two of exercise. Then the effect of having water is not going to be any different from having electrolytes or milk or anything else. So it really depends on the context of, you know, what else you're having with the fluid and when your next session is and how, you know, how quickly you need to rehydrate from one session to the next. If you need to rehydrate within, you know, a matter of a couple of hours, then probably yes, having something with some electrolytes in it will be beneficial. But if you're talking, you know, 12 hours or 15 hours or something, and you're going to have, you know, your normal meals and snacks and stuff in there, then probably the choice of drink doesn't make any difference.
Okay, interesting. Now, we also discussed, that Steph and I, how much sodium should I take during the run?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've done a PhD in sodium and endurance athletes, and I don't feel I'm much closer to answering that question as well. It's an interesting one, and traditionally, I mean, you can take sweat samples, and, you know, I did a huge amount of that during my research in terms of working out how much sodium individuals are losing. The question is, once you know how much someone's losing, how much of that should you replace? Should you replace 100% of that, 50% of that, none, does it matter? I'd suggest probably my thinking sort of gone around in loops and circles and tied itself in knots over the years, but I think where I've sort of come to is it's not so much about trying to match a certain percentage of your sodium loss. It's actually trying to balance the sodium that you're consuming with the water you're consuming, so you're not, you know, having too much sodium relative to water or too much water relative to sodium, because either of those things are going to upset the balance in terms of fluid between the fluid inside your cells and the fluid on the outside in terms of in your blood and surrounding your cells. And so if you have just pure water, particularly over a long period of time, and particularly if you drink too much of it, it's going to move towards the inside of your cells. But on the other hand, if you have bucket loads of sodium, like you're just downing salt capsules and stuff and actually not drinking that much, the reverse is going to happen. The water is going to be pulled out of your cells. And neither of those things are probably a desirable outcome. So my suggestion now is that, you know, if you know that you're a saltier sweater in terms of you had that measured, then probably you need to be at the higher end. But if you don't lose that much sodium in your sweat, then you can be at the lower end. But even the measurement of sweat sodium is not a very precise thing. So, and it varies so much in different scenarios, different weather conditions, different pace, different body temperatures, all that kind of stuff. So I guess my practical take home from there is that if you're going to measure sweat sodium content and you get your number, might be, you know, 60 millimole per litre or whatever it is, it's not a definite number. So you're not saying I'm a 60 person and this person's a 40 person. It's more I'm probably at the higher end of normal and that person's, you know, somewhere in the middle or at the lower end or whatever. And so I need to be a bit more conscious about it. But I don't think we're any closer to really saying this is exactly what you need to do. And as I said, it's so variable from day to day that that would be almost impossible anyway.
Yeah, no, I don't think any listener knows what to do now.
Yeah, I know, and also practitioners, right?
Yeah.
We love just a nice, you know, simple guide, but, you know, I think, again, like just where it is so individual and, you know, depends on the environment, the fitness, how acclimatized a person is, et cetera, as well, too, Alan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all of those things will make a difference. So basically your sweat sodium concentration increases with sweat rate. So anything that makes your sweat rate higher, whether it's you're running faster, the weather's hotter or more humid, there's less airflow, like running indoors on a treadmill compared to outdoors, any of those things will increase the sweat sodium concentration. And it doesn't mean it's an emergency and we need to panic. That's just the effect that it has. So I guess, yeah, I think from a practical perspective, if you do get your sodium measured, you sort of just need to know, am I at the higher, the middle or the lower end, and then kind of adjust the sodium in what you're drinking with the help of someone who can help you plan that to, you know, roughly match what you're doing, but realize that you're never going to get it exactly right on any given day. So as long as you're in the ballpark, that's probably fine. And the reason I tend to like matching the sodium concentration of your fluid to the sweat sodium concentration is that it's scalable. So if you drink 100% of your fluid losses, well, you're still matching the sodium to the fluid. Or if you only drink 20% of your fluid losses, you're still matching it, because as the volume of drink goes up and down, the amount of sodium goes up and down with it in proportion.
How am I going to know mid-race, say I do 100K ultra, how am I going to know whether I need more sodium or whether I need more water? What's going to be the signs that tell me that?
Very difficult to answer that. There's not really any good ones, to be honest. People talk about, oh, you know, getting a salt crust on my skin must mean that I'm losing a lot of sweat, losing a lot of salt in my sweat. Well, yes, but that can accumulate over hours anyway, even if you're not a very salty sweater. And if you're wearing dark coloured clothing, you're more likely to see it than if you're wearing white clothing. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a very reliable indicator. This is one of the arguments that, you know, people are having in the sort of drink to thirst versus drink to a plan debate, is saying, well, if I drink to a plan and it's 20% off on any given day, by the time I'm up to 8-10 hours in, you go 10% off per hour over 10 hours, all of a sudden that's a huge discrepancy between what I'm losing and what I'm drinking. And I tend to agree with that. I think in those sort of longer events that you kind of have to use thirst as a guide to some extent, because there's not much else you can use. You know, if you do pee, urine's going to be very unreliable during exercise, so I wouldn't trust that. As I said, salt on your skin's not going to be reliable. Pretty much the only thing that we can do, you know, short of stopping taking a blood test and waiting 10 minutes, is thirst. It's really the only feedback mechanism that we're going to have.
Sodium intake and cramping. That's one that everyone loves talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So where do we fall on that one, professionals?
It's another interesting area. You know, 5 years ago, the general consensus had come to sodium's got nothing to do with cramping. It's all about muscle fatigue, that kind of thing. Sort of the research in this area goes back to like miners in the 1920s and 30s. But just this year, actually, there's been a couple of papers published that suggest that the issue is not necessarily a loss of sodium during exercise or dehydration per se, it's one thing that may increase your risk of cramping is actually suddenly diluting the sodium in your blood very quickly. So if you become dehydrated during exercise, what tends to happen is you're losing more water than you're losing sodium. So the blood sodium concentration actually goes up as you become dehydrated by definition. And no matter how salty a squirt is, that will always happen. But if you suddenly, if you're quite dehydrated and then you suddenly scull a lot of plain water, that seems to be one of the things that is going to increase your risk of cramping. And so you can see this during exercise, but you often see this after a race. You know, people stop running, they'll relax, they go, you know, have a bit of water because they're thirsty, and all of a sudden, you know, half an hour later, they start cramping, even though the race is already finished.
Steph, so I told you during my, like when I wrote out my plan and everything, that I would drink beer most nights. Now, as it gets hotter, is that getting worse for me, or is it okay to continue with a few beers after a training session? Or what effect does heat have on alcohol and hydration?
I mean, like, alcohol has a bit of that diuretic effect, but, you know, I would say, like, focus on getting in some, like, rehydrating quite well. So, you know, at dinner you might have your a bit of water with your food and stuff, so you've got your electrolytes from food, carbs from food, which will help retain the fluid that you're drinking. And you can definitely have some beers, but just make sure you also, you know, have some of the water coming in. It's got to be practical and you know, sociable and something that you enjoy as well. Would you want to add to that, Alan?
I was going to say that the guys up in Queensland that we were talking about before that did the post-exercise rehydration stuff, they've done a lot of work in beer and post-exercise hydration, and they've all done all sorts of weird stuff like adding salt to beer to see what effect it has and all kinds of stuff.
Percentage of alcohol as well, I think.
Yeah, so to generally less than about 4% alcohol, you don't get much of a diuretic effect at all. So, you know, maybe in the hot weather you just go to lighter beers and drink more of them.
Okay.
Might be the way to go. or drink the same amount, but just the lighter beers. But yeah, they added salt to it, and apparently in a small amount it was okay, but once they started adding a lot it tasted bloody horrible, and they had beers exploding and all kinds of fun stuff that you do when you get to do beer research.
It's a good way to stop you from drinking the beer, telling someone they have to put a spoonful of salt in.
Exactly.
All right. Now, Steph, is there anything, if, say, for instance, Ali goes and runs the marathon in Tokyo. Is there anything that you would do different in how you prepared her for the heat on the day than how you prepared me?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're both very different in terms of different body mass. You know, I don't know what Ellie's been doing sort of nutrition wise and, you know, and carb intake and gut training wise and fluid tolerance and, you know, gut symptoms. So, like, there's always, you know, these kind of key factors that we're looking at in terms of, you know, fluid, carbohydrate intake, like what Alan said, you know, menthol, all of those types of things. But then we need to key it in to that specific individual. And then, like, I'd also, like, for you, we also looked at, you know, that lead-in diet. A big thing for me for your race for Doha, we backed off of too much sort of, you know, bulk and residue because you were racing at, like, you know, midnight. Yes. So you've obviously got all this kind of gastric load coming into then you're putting a big demand on your gut when you're racing. Compared to, you know, if we're racing, you know, in the morning, you kind of have that bigger time to fast. So, you know, for you, we sort of focused on really making sure we kind of got all that timing and stuff right for Ellie for Tokyo. You know, we'd have a look at when her race start was. I would implement in the heat for someone, I would still look at reducing the total FODMAP intake, just because, like my study showed last year, which just got published, that, you know, a higher FODMAP intake can increase our severity of symptoms and the risk. So I still think, you know, it's not too difficult to change. And if I can just minimize risk where I'm able to, that's something I'd definitely put in.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Mm. Yep.
So the only other thing I'd add to that is just coming back sort of full circle to the start where we talked about, you know, the temperature versus humidity and other factors. In dry heat, sweat is obviously much more effective at cooling you down. So the focus there should be really on, you know, making sure that, you know, you're sweating well. So heat acclimation obviously is really important, getting enough fluid in, but even like pouring water over yourself, because that's going to evaporate off and it's almost like free sweat, if you like. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a very humid environment, sweat is much less effective at cooling you down. So some of those other strategies in terms of the slushies and the cold drinks and the pre-cooling and the pre-exercise hyperhydration, because you know you're going to sweat more in a humid environment, they all become more important in that sort of environment.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So because I could never explain why I just got this sudden burst of energy every time, like from way back, like when I was a kid, if when you get like water squirted over your head, or for instance, if you're it's a really hot day and you go and swim and you dive under the water, or you go surfing or something like that, it's like, oh, it just gives you this incredible rush.
Yeah,
and it feels like that when you run a marathon and you dump some water over your head.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's just that evaporative effect.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to you both for coming on today. When will this paper be released?
January is the plan. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So all the coaches will get it in time before Tokyo.
Yes. Although I guess all the marathon coaches probably don't need to read it now. It's moved up to Sapporo.
Well, it's still going to be kind of warm, though.
Yeah, I haven't really looked at what the expected temperature is there. I just know people have been saying it's going to be a lot less of an issue than it was in Tokyo itself.
Less humid, sort of still high 20s temperature.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it would be silly to ignore doing heat work by the sounds of it and taking all that on board.
Yeah, and, you know, just like here, it could be a freak day where it's really humid in other parts of the country where it normally isn't.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it could be the opposite. I remember in Beijing, a lot of people prepared for heat for the Beijing Olympics, and then like the cycling road race, it turned out to be like 18 degrees and pouring with rain all afternoon. But, you know, that happens. You know, you have all these scientists and stuff that spend 2.5 years preparing for this stuff, and it all turns out to be rubbish on the day because Mother Nature takes a different turn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can only hope for super hot, terrible conditions again, just because that seems to be when the Australians perform pretty well.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. We will catch up with you guys again for that more generic chat about sort of race day nutrition and tapering carb loading, because I think that's a really good one.
Yeah. Awesome. Right. Sounds good.
Thanks, guys.
Cool. All right. Cheers. No worries.
Today's episode of the Inside Running Podcast was proudly sponsored by Fractal. Fractal's vision is to create the world's best headwear using their own experience and passion in a style that promotes adventure and uniqueness for a community that loves to get outside and run.